Case this morning, number four, is In Re the Marriage of Aiken.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Valerie Villison for the appellant Andrew Aiken. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This appeal of an order modifying child support raises three issues as described in the briefs. However, for my time with you today, I'm going to focus on only one, unless the Court has questions on the other two issues or if time allows. And that is whether the father's note payments towards his buy-in obligation to sell in construction are normal business expenses under 2609-171 that must be deducted from his gross business income before his child support obligation is calculated. I first want to clarify the standard of review. It's de novo because this is a legal question. It's not abuse of discretion. This is not a situation where the trial court found that the father didn't justify his business expenses, that he didn't prove his business expenses, or even that the deduction of the business expenses would result in a harmful reduction of child support. Instead, what the court did here is concluded as a matter of law that no payments towards a buy-in obligation are not business expenses under the statute and that could not be deducted from his income in calculating child support.
Use the term buy-in obligation. Isn't that kind of the fundamental question? Is this, as in Mull, a circumstance where in order to preserve, maintain a source of income, a person is required to make a contribution, a buy-in? And doesn't that take us to the question of, is this really like an investment, or is this more a form of compensation, this stock incentive plan that he takes the note out to?
It's a form of compensation. Under Mull, to maintain his source of it's a normal business expense if the contribution needs to be made to maintain his source of income. In this case, the source of income that they are trying to count towards his child support obligation is his ownership interest and the shareholder distributions that he receives from Sellen because of his interest.
But in Mull, doesn't make a perfect crossover, but they're the individuals protecting his income as a partner. And presumably a partner's income is much greater than an associate's income in a law firm. So isn't that not akin to this situation where he could have gone out and bought rental property, which would generate income and would appreciate in value over time, and that wouldn't count as a normal business expense, correct? It's only because it's affiliated with the business.
Well, I think, again, it's a business expense because it's part of his business. He is an owner, employee owner of this construction company. So I believe it is exactly like Mull. It's just like being a partner in a law firm. You might have a base salary, but you also have additional income. And that's what he's protecting when he pays those note payments. In order to have that ownership interest, to get the shareholder distributions, he has to have that interest. Otherwise, all he has are his wages. So if you want to look at his income from his share on his K-1 for purposes of calculating child support, you have to also deduct how he got that income, and that is his note payments. So for 2014, for example, his shareholder distributions were $125,000, but that's not what he actually had available to him to pay child support because he had to pay $111,000 towards the note payments. So all he really had available to pay his child support is $14,000 plus his W-2 wages.
Do we have enough information to support that determination, though, in terms of we don't know if he got a discount on the shares that he acquired? We don't know if those are widely available to any employee. I mean, the plan allows it, but did they, in practice, offer it to any employee?
No, it was only offered to key employees, and I believe that's in his declaration. Mm-hmm. Also, there is proof that he actually paid these amounts. There's, in the record, I don't have the cites, but if you look in the sealed financial source documents, you will see personal checks coming from his bank accounts. You'll see the deductions going from his bank account to Sellen towards his note payments. So again, this isn't an issue where he couldn't prove his expenses. It's whether these are business expenses at all. And again, under Mull, I think it's clear it is. And it also just makes sense. Marriage of Peters, which is also a decision from this court, you have to look at what income is available. And if under, for example, in Peters, that was a reversal, the trial court ordered the father to pay $1,200 a month in child support. But the court said, but if you looked at his income less his business loans, he actually only netted $1,900 a month. So under those circumstances, the Court of Appeals reversed and said, you know, obviously you didn't look at his net take-home pay. And that's what we have to do here. You have to look at the net take-home pay. And that's what the statute relies on. It's if the money's not available, if you're paying taxes, if you've got business expenses, if you've got professional dues, if you've got mandatory pension payments, those are amounts that should be deducted from your income because there's no point in calculating child support on income that's just not available. And that's what we're dealing with here.
Was the purpose of this buy-in to give him more, to give him immediate income, or was it in some way akin to a retirement plan because of the way the distributions would be paid out over time?
Well, I suppose it's a little of both, but the thing is, whatever retirement or whatever value he'll have in the future, it's all speculative. It's a closely held corporation. You know, if Celent were to blow up in 5 years, you know, that stock interest is gone. So what we're really looking at is his income right now.
What does the record show about what would happen if he just stopped making the note payments?
Well, in his declaration, he said, well, if he stopped making the note payments, he would lose his interest. I think the shareholders' agreement supports that. Because, again, this isn't a case where, although I don't think there'd be much of a difference, but I think it's compelling in this case, that the note payments are to Celent. When he got his ownership interest, he didn't get cash from someone and pass it on, so he's got the stock in hand. Instead, it was a note that he signed over to Celent that he is required to pay on an annual basis. If he stops paying that, then he doesn't have 2% ownership interest anymore because he hasn't paid for it. And more likely than not, you know, they would, you know, set that off. And, you know, if you owe your employer, even if you are an owner employee, $100,000 or more, you know, you'll certainly probably lose your job. So not only would he lose his shareholder distributions, but he'd probably lose his wages as well.
It's kind of speculative, though, isn't it, about being fired on this record?
It is. I mean, you know, that was his understanding based on his experience and talking things. But there was nothing official saying that he would, in fact, be fired.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. Shelby Lemel of Masters Law Group on behalf of the respondent. Judge Berland, before returning to your questions on whether this is a buy-in obligation, I want to briefly address the standard of review, which is, of course, an abuse of discretion standard, like it is in every case where this Court reviews modifications made to a child support order. The same standard that this Court applied in Marriage of Ayat, dealing with very similar questions to the questions presented here. What deductions can a party take under Section 5 of the statute controlling deductions to calculate net income for child support? There's no reason to change the standard here.
But would it be an abuse of discretion if we misapplied the statutory definition of, or statutory term, normal business expenses?
Yeah, the Court can certainly abuse its discretion by incorrectly applying the law. And I should say that I don't think this case turns on the standard that's applied, but I don't think the Court should change course on the standard it typically applies in cases like this one. So turning then, Your Honor, to your questions on whether it's a buy-in obligation. This is not a buy-in in any sense of the term used in the marriage of Mull. What the partner was buying in Mull was a piece of a partnership in a legal practice, which is a piece of his conduct of his own practice, the practice of law. He's buying a referral network and clients and shared resources. The buy-in allows him to continue conducting his business. That is why that buy-in is a business expense. It also is not comparable to the capital calls at issue in Mull. Now, there's been a debate in the briefing about whether they're capital calls or capital contributions. It doesn't matter. At issue in Mull is that he was obligated as a condition of his partnership to contribute money to the law firm so that the law firm could purchase an asset, in that case a property. No one obligated Mr. Aiken to contribute money to Celent Construction so that Celent could buy assets necessary to carry on its business. He bought stock. And that is an investment income in the most classic sense, and it doesn't change because he chose to buy it from the company that he works for, as opposed to buying it from a publicly traded company like any other individual.
If we had a record that showed an individual's being hired in to Cellen as a chief financial officer, and they say, here's your compensation package that includes this level of salary, parking space, and 401k, and the stock incentive plan, that's part of the deal, that's part of your compensation. Wouldn't that make this less like Mull and more like, well, if it's a form of compensation, then you should net it out what it's actually costing him to buy the stock and the return he's receiving from the stock?
If it was part of a compensation package and he had to purchase that, then yes, I think it's you could, in that case, under an abuse of discretion standard, consider it a part of his income. But it's not. It's something that he has the option to purchase. And he acknowledges at Clerk's Papers 108 that the option to purchase stock once offered to him is an option that he gets to exercise voluntarily or not, and that it is not related to his continued employment at Cellen Construction. So it's you can do it or not. You can purchase the stock or not, no differently than he could choose to go purchase stock in Amazon, Microsoft, Google, or Starbucks. That doesn't make that investment purchase business-like because it in some way tangentially relates to his business. When the court looks at what is a normal business expense, what it should look at is an expense that one typically would assume to carry on the course of their business. He's buying stock, and he's buying it both because it creates a benefit for him immediately to the tune of over $100,000 on average a year, and because it creates a significant future benefit. The idea that Mr. Aiken has argued that this is not beneficial because it could explode at some point, so can any stock purchase. That doesn't change the nature of the purchase at the outset, which is a voluntary investment, nor does it change the nature of that voluntary investment because he chose to borrow money from his employer to buy it. The reason Mull turns the way that it does is because the capital contribution at issue there was required by the terms of his partnership agreement. And he would lose his entire income, which is the product of his carrying on of his business, if he didn't make that contribution. Judge Verlin, you made a point that he would earn more as a partner. The record in Mull shows that he would earn twice. So he was jeopardizing is double the earnings and the loss of his entire job, which I should add was in a self-employed capacity because he's a partner at Perkins Coie, so of course is responsible for generating business for himself as well as for other members of the company. It's a classic self-employment situation. Although this was not before the trial court, I've raised as an alternate ground for this court to affirm that Mr. Aiken is not self-employed and so is not entitled to take a normal business expense. He is an employee of Cellen Construction. He does not work for himself. He does not create his own business. He's not self-employed and isn't entitled to this deduction in any event. If there's no more questions on this issue, I do want to briefly touch on one of the other two issues raised in the brief, and that is the extraordinary child support payments that are not included in the basic support calculation. As this court is aware, the parties do not dispute that they have a son who has profound needs, needs that are not covered under a basic support obligation. And the trial court recognized as much and allowed for certain expenses to cover things like swimming lessons, skiing, and summer camps, expenses that this court has recognized are not included in a basic support calculation.
What if there's a disagreement, even now that we have this specificity from over, you know, he wants to ski 3 days a week and I want to pay for 2 days a week, what would that lead to?
Arbitration. Clerk's Papers 248. At the next page of the child support order, the court provided that if there's a disagreement about a specific expense as to any specific item, the parties arbitrate it.
So categories is different than a specific expense. He's basically obligated to pay certain categories, but he could still dispute the amount to be paid?
The amounts, I would point the court to Clerk's Papers 70 and 264. So there were specific amounts before the trial court. So to answer your question, I don't think he could go back and say, I don't want to pay $840 a year for skiing, because that amount was before the trial court. And the trial court said, you will pay for skiing. So it's a decision that that's a reasonable activity, and an amount. Now, if a therapist, for example, was to recommend, you know, maybe tennis would have a therapeutic benefit, if he doesn't want the child to play tennis or thinks it's too expensive because it's inconsistent with what's provided for in the plan, he can arbitrate that provision. So the argument that this has been made, that this somehow disrupts joint decision-making, the trial court takes care of that at the very next page of the child support order. And I'd also point the court to the report of proceedings at 21 and 24, where the court is made very well aware of this argument that there's a dispute with joint decision-making, doesn't want to create a problem in that regard, and remedies that on the next page of the child support order.
Remedies it by having arbitration?
Yes, if there's a disagreement about an activity or an expense. What the court was trying to accomplish here is to allow the child to participate in activities that are not covered with the basic support obligation that he has traditionally participated in, with a copious testimony from the mother and therapist that these have a benefit for this child and this child in particular, without the historic back and forth that's gone on between these parties. All it is a recognition by the court that these things are needed and they're not covered. It doesn't usurp joint decision making because if there's a dispute, that there's an alternative dispute resolution provision in the order. If there's no further questions, I'll rest there. Thank you. We'd ask the court to affirm.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to quickly address the issue about the joint decision-making. That provision of arbitration does, in fact, modify the parenting plan. Because if you look at CP 1327, if there are disagreements on healthcare decisions, educational decisions, the parties can go to mediation, not arbitration. So that did, in fact, modify the parenting plan. But in regards to the normal business expenses, this is no different than MUL. The buy-in in MUL, that was just as voluntary as it was for Mr. Aiken in this case. If Mr. Mull didn't want to be a partner, he didn't have to be a partner. I mean, nobody, you don't get shanghaied into being forced to be a partner just because they offer it to you. So that, and that is part of the contributions that this court said were part of the normal business expenses. It wasn't just capital contributions or capital calls or however you want to refer it to. They specifically said part of the deductions he can take was whatever he paid to do a buy-in. And the payments here, this isn't the mandatory pension plan payment, but I do think it's somewhat similar. Once Mr. Aiken exercised, you know, his opportunity to become a part owner in Celent, because the shareholders agreement shows, you know, this isn't a publicly traded company. The only owners of Celent are some key people that are employees, so it's employee owned. So he is one of the owners, and he does in fact work for himself, because whatever efforts he does as CFO, whatever profits are made because of decisions that he helps make, you know, that those are the shareholder distributions that pass through the company to the individual shareholders. And again, you know, the idea that, you know, this might be a retirement plan for him later, or he might have some stuff, this court rejected that as a basis for avoiding deducting business expenses, because in Mull, the mother made the same exact claim. She says the buy-in, any capital contributions, all it does is increase his equity in the partnership, and that he will have a future benefit from that, so that should be a reason. And this court said that ignores the reality of the fact that those payments still need to be made, which reduces his income available to pay child support. On another ground, again, we have to consider what's available to pay child support. It's ludicrous to say he has an extra $125,000 a year to pay child support from, because he doesn't. He has to pay the notes. If he doesn't pay the notes, the source of income, his ownership interest, you know, can't be maintained. And that's exactly what this court said in Mull. I mean, there should be no difference because it was a partnership, a law firm partnership, or a construction company. It's a closely held corporation that he is an owner of, and these are expenses that he must pay. I mean, it's just as involuntary as what Mr. Mull had to do when, you know, he had to, when they asked him to contribute to the building partnership. It's the same exact thing. And we ask that the court reverse. Thank you. Yep.